Hello and welcome to another edition of Center Circle Live. Marty and Charlie this week.
No Armin.
He's sick today.
Yeah, poor guy.
So now we get to enjoy the silence, maybe? I'm just teasing. Okay, before we get into anything, we need to talk about this cat who's still running around the studio.
Right.
Just an update from last week. I got some great recommendations for a name. Marty 2 was one of my favorites, yeah. What do you think about that, Charlie?
That's a little conceited.
Yeah, I immediately replied. I think it was Crow and Cat on Twitter. I just said like I'm not a big of a narcissist, but that could change over time. You know, if you wanted to predict that,
maybe that's now. The second cat.
Yeah, probably. Cat Baloo, which turns out, shout out to Ken Lickers for that one. That's a movie from the 50s or something, or 60s, as Jane Fonda.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of
Baloo
it.
And Baloo Tabla, obviously.
That's what I thought the reference was as well.
Yeah, I'd never heard of it. And then I also got Pierre Andre as in Gignac.
Pierre Andre.
Yeah. Yeah, so that, I like Pierre Andre.
You did call out for a double-barreled French name.
Yeah, that was right up my alley. But unfortunately, we're not going to name... Not going to name it a French name. Of course, I have a partner, and she was like, yeah, we're not. I don't want to name it this, because I don't want to explain it to people, which makes sense. So
makes a little bit of sense, but it...
I know.
It's no fun.
Okay, we've got a lot to talk about this week, not cat-related. Let's start with Forge. 2-2 against HFX on Sunday, and then they beat Valor 3-1. Really just heading towards the fall title at this point, or at the very least, a spot in the CPL championship.
Yeah, it really seemed like it. I mean, obviously, they are in this very, very close, almost dead heat with Cavalry for the actual fall title. But, I mean, at this point, it really seems like those are the two sides that we're going to be seeing in the championship. I mean, Forge obviously is not without their flaws, as we saw in maybe the first hour of that game against Halifax. There really isn't a team that's broken out in a fall competition like Forge has.
Well, what did you see in that first half? Because I saw a team that played in Winnipeg and is in this kind of this intense schedule where they'll play like a Wednesday, Saturday. I think they have like a midweek off next week, and then it's back to Wednesday, Saturday till the end of the season. What did you see in them in the first half? Just tired legs?
Yeah, I think that's got to be part of it. I mean, also, Halifax had been off for a while, right? They had, I think, it was about 2 weeks off
because
they
last
played on Labor Day, I think. And I think it was more by virtue of the Wanderers having a lot more energy and just being really keen to get this monkey off their back and get a result on the road. Which, I mean, if you're going to get a result on the road, Hamilton is a hard place to do it.
Yeah. So up to, if you haven't seen it, up to nothing after almost 70 minutes.
Yeah.
Akeem Garcia, Mohamed Karuma were excellent. Akeem Garcia scoring that one, and obviously Gutierrez with that long range goal. Mm-hmm. Gotta feel for Hart on this one though. You really do.
It's
like they were
disappointing.
So close.
Yeah, you have to be disappointed if you're HFX. I mean, obviously at the end of the day, a point on the road against the first place team while you're in last place in the table is nothing to sniff at, but it was there for them. I mean, even in the first half, I'm sure that they'd be frustrated at not finishing a couple more of those chances. Because they really were the team on the front foot for the first at least hour of that game.
And let's be honest, if HFX won, that would make the fall title chase a little bit more interesting. Now Forge only need 9 points to win the second spot in the CPL title and eliminate, or the fall title, I should say, and eliminate those other teams from being able to win the fall title. Also, if they just get another 3 points, they will be guaranteed to be at least first or second in the overall standings, which would also guarantee them a spot if one of those other teams don't win the fall standings. It's a little fall championship. It's a little confusing, but yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, Forge is pretty close, I think we can say at this point.
I think that's definitely true. I mean, obviously, if we're kind of looking at what-if scenarios, I mean, the beauty of a league with so few teams and so many teams in it is that they're going to have to play all of these teams that are trying to knock them down in the run-in at the end of the season. So, like, if they do drop points, if they were to fall to a Pacific or a Valor or an FC Edmonton, I mean, it is possible for one of those teams to go on a run, but I think at this point, Forge is really looking towards Cavalry and how they're going to play them in that CPL championship in a month and a half.
Interesting that Valor is now in third place.
How did that happen? They lost 8-0 2 weeks ago.
And then, okay, we got to talk about that first half. on Thursday in Winnipeg.
My God.
30 minutes in, Valor, after losing 8-0, are down 3-0.
Down to 10 men.
Down to 10 men. The Adam Mitter, I don't know what you want to call it. I mean, obviously, from his point of view, blocking the ball with his hand on the goal line. Clearly, he thought it wasn't going to be a red card and a penalty.
Right.
But, I mean, in the moment, it's a tough one. But Valor come back from that that new depth, really.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we saw the first half of that game, and everyone's just immediate thought is, here we go again. This is, like, Valor is going to get destroyed by Cavalry, and then the next time out, they're just going to do the same to Forge, who I guess they're trying to match everything that Cavalry does. But then I honestly was impressed with the way that Valor kind of tried to get it together, maybe they were never going to win that game. They were never going to actually climb their way back into it. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of impressed with the way that they kind of played for pride in maybe the last half hour of that game, especially. And the goal they scored.
Like, yeah.
My goodness, that was a really, really exciting build-up play goal. And I mean, that's something that we've seen Valor do on many occasions. It's just been the defending that's the problem.
Dylan Carrera with, a great pass to Attardo, mm-hmm. who had three goals on the week. I guess we got to talk about York 9. What an answer back for Valor. 4-2 win at York Lions Stadium.
Yeah, 4-2 win for Winnipeggers with the goals.
Seven Winnipeggers that started that game.
Yeah.
And there was a great quote from Carrero after that game saying that, you know, basically there's tons of players from this city and we're trying to fight for this city. We proved we could do it against mm-hmm. Forge. And then there you are, Ali Moussi with a great finish, Sacramento with an unbelievable goal, and then you've got Attardo as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is the second time Valor has kind of made a statement by going into York Lions Stadium and pulling out a big win, right?
Because
they kind of broke their winless streak earlier in the summer by going there and winning 2-0 in probably a closer game, maybe a less back-and-forth, high-octane attacking game. But yeah, this weekend when they took on York 9, they were just... There just seemed to be a kind of determination in them that, like, we are going to get a result. We need a win. We need to kind of reverse our fortunes and maybe pick up where we left off from the last half hour of that Forge game on Thursday.
It's good to see. I mean, because the first half hour of that game, it was hard. It was hard to watch, as you mentioned, like against Forge. But yeah, it's good to see them turning around.
Yeah, I mean, We've always kind of known that Valor has a ton of really exciting attacking players. I mean, they've got Michael Petrasu, who's amazing up the flanks, and they've got Marco Bustos, who's probably one of the most electrifying attacking players in the CPL, in my opinion.
Messi-like. I think we'll get to that later in the show.
We'll get there.
What a teaser, right? Or like Dylan Sacramento.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get onto him, too, where, you know, he... Golden Boot winner in League One last year.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing behind Petrasu and Bustos,
Yeah, that's the thing. They've got so many attacking players that they can't get them all into the lineup.
Yeah.
Because they still have to find a way to defend. They've got all of these great attacking players, but you can only play like three or maybe four of them in a game.
I think the last week has been good for players that, especially attacking players, that we expected a lot from. And whether it be fitness or playing time or for whatever reason, they're finally starting to get their showing. Like, yeah. I think of Simon Adji.
That's who I thought you were talking about.
Well, Dylan Sacramento as well with that goal. And then I put Gutierrez in there for HFX.
Yeah.
Where he's had some good appearances in the last, like, half of the season. Didn't really play a whole lot at the start.
Yeah.
What's another player that you're maybe, like, looking to, or a player that hasn't quite... scratch that itch yet? Like, well, Marcel Zajac is another good example.
Marcel Zajac's a great one. I mean, there's probably a few at Forge. I mean, even Chris Nanko, we could probably expect a little bit more of that sort of thing from. Mm-hmm. Another player who kind of, I guess, in this sense, like, maybe we're just starting to see come into his own would be a guy like Caden Chung at Pacific, mm-hmm. who has been in the lineup pretty much all year, but he maybe didn't have it all figured out on the offensive side of the ball until recently. I mean, obviously, his goal was a deflection, but it was still a really nice piece of play to kind of put that settling touch down and fire the shot in.
It's too bad that Pacific, I think, early on in the season where they had all that defensive stability where we didn't really see the fullbacks engaged as much, too.
Right.
That could be part of that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, they aren't necessarily a team that's set up to play with that kind of fullback. Like, they're not York 9 where they have, like, Abzi and Donor flying up the flanks like that. But Caden Chung's a very talented player. And I think we are starting to see that a little bit more. And I would be interested to see him more involved in that attacking setup.
I think I want to see, like, I was thinking about this the other day, Vincent Lamy for HFX Wanderers. He played a little bit in the Canadian Championship, and then I think he's only played about 45 minutes in the league. He looked really good in preseason, and he's kind of like a poacher. He would be very similar to Akeem Garcia, especially how he played on Sunday. It'd be interesting to see if he maybe gets a run in here at the end of the season, but that's just me. I'm not a scout or anything, but okay, let's talk quickly about the Wild Rose Cup and the El Clasico. Cavalry win it pretty convincingly, I guess, over the four games. They win the season series, but I think the storyline here is with FC Edmonton.
Yeah, I mean, just talk about a reverse of fortunes from the early fall season. I mean, they were right in the mix there with Cavalry and Forge for probably the first month, like most of July and August for a while, but just I think the last couple weeks they've just really fallen off. Like, the attack has dried up. I mean, Easton Ungaro isn't scoring at will anymore.
Those were the days.
Those were the days. I mean, it's not necessarily, I mean, they've lost two straight games 1-0 now.
Yeah.
Right? Because they lost to Cavalry on Wednesday and they lost to Pacific on Saturday. And it just, I don't know. Saturday's loss to Pacific wasn't for lack of effort, because Tomi Amiobi had so many chances. I mean, he actually played really well for a game your team got shut out in.
This is a team that hasn't scored in three straight games.
Yeah.
And I think they've only scored three in the last six total.
Yeah, I think they're winless in six as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's tough because you saw Easton Ungaro kind of came off the bench
on Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you make of that?
I'm not sure if that's just something about trying to get the guy rest, because he has been like kind of suddenly become this like locked starter.
Because he came off on Wednesday in the El Clasico too.
Yeah, he did. And then, yeah, he came off the bench for, I think, the last maybe about 30 minutes against Pacific. And he was playing kind of a different role than he's been deployed at before, because Jeff Paul has kind of kept Amiobi to that more center role to kind of hold up and cause a disturbance in the box. And Ungaro was drifting a little wider, which I'm not sure really worked out in his favor, because he's another guy who's kind of, well, first of all, tall and physical and
surprisingly quick, good on the ball too.
I mean, that's definitely true.
Yeah, I could see why you'd want to maybe put him out there. But okay, 85th minute, you're managing a fantasy CPL team. You look to your bench, you need a goal. Who do you go to, Easton Ungaro or Tyler Tardo?
That's tough. I think
the greatest question.
I think just in terms of the kind of player they are, if I'm looking for a late goal, I think I go with Ungaro, because not only is he able to score a goal yourself, he's, as I said, like one of those kind of bigger physical guys who can create space for someone else to score a goal. If you just throw him in the box, he'll be an annoyance to the other team.
I mean, I'm going to go with Tardo on this one, because Tyler Tardo has scored more headed goals than Easton Ungaro has this year.
That's fair.
I think he scored four or something like that. He's on like an incredible run of form, and you know, you saw Rob Gale like kind of had to start him against York, because he's like, again, he's a hot hand. He's forced Gale to do that a couple times this season, where he's like, he's just so good, I got to play him. He's 18. He's like the breakout story of the season, and someone we aren't talking enough about.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm 100% convinced by him yet, because a few of the goals that I've seen him score have been, he's very good at getting to the right place at the right time, I think. Which is not a knock against him at all, but it's also definitely a testament to his teammates in setting him up. So I still would probably say that Ungaro is a more proven goal scorer at this point, but Atardo is actually like a very, very impressive guy to get off the bench at the moment, isn't he?
Agree to disagree on that one. Switching to the national team here. First podcast since Canada wrapped up their Nations League home and home with Cuba. How would you rank these two games? Very poor, fair, good, or very good? What do you think? You think I should start doing telemarketing or what?
I think on the whole, across the two games, you have to put it in a good column. I mean, obviously we all would have liked to see them score more down in the Cayman Islands. I mean, they kind of put one on the board early with that great Alfonso Davies finish, and then sort of kind of coasted towards the end. I mean, knowing that they were in front pretty comfortably, and if they just kind of got the job done, it'd be okay. So I think I'd put it in the good column, but I know that there's definitely, we all know that there's a lot of pessimists in Canadian men's national team soccer fandom who would probably rank it a little lower based on that second game.
See, I wouldn't put myself in the pessimist column in that one, but I would sort of, I'm leaning more towards fair, but when you look at it, it was something that I saw like, oh, it's only 1-0, but Canada is the, across all the teams in League A, because it was home and home with the second and third ranked teams. So like Costa Rica, Honduras, mm-hmm. US, Mexico, they haven't played yet. Canada's in the best spot out of any of those teams in that's played already in League A. So that's a positive. And it is still like it's a +7 goal differential. Yeah. Like, do you think that people are being too harsh on that? Like,
I don't know. I mean, I do see where they're coming from, where like, especially kind of the second half of the Cuba game, it just wasn't very interesting.
Yeah, that's
true. I do think Milan Borjan was called into action far too often.
Yeah, in that game. Yeah,
it's a little worrying. They're only up 1-0, and that's a game that it's frankly disastrous if you don't win.
Yeah, right? And I think we got to talk about Daniil Henry as well getting sent off for dissent. Now, really, the question is with that, it opens up that first game against the U.S., yeah, where clearly Herdman has Henry and Cornelius as his number one and number two. Mm-hmm. Opens up a spot for somebody.
I think that somebody is named Stephen Vitoria.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's obviously not great timing for Daniil and for the team, but like, no. For Stephen Vitoria, he's playing in top division in Portugal and right, like just at the right time where he's getting all these minutes. Now is your opportunity, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think this is something that John Herdman specifically mentioned in talking about calling Vitoria back into the squad. Like, he hadn't been called to a national team camp since I think 2017. That part of that was because he wasn't playing every day. Mm. And now he is playing top flight minutes in Portugal at center back. And obviously he doesn't have the history and the connection with Derek Cornelius like Daniil Henry does, but he's a perfectly capable center back. I just it'll be kind of trial by fire throwing him into a game against the United States together.
I mean, but he has played, like, he has played in MLS. He's played against American, yeah, players, which was one of the things that, you know, that they talked about Cornelius and Henry's, like, they've played against not only like top level American players, but players on the national team, mm-hmm, in their league.
Yeah.
Who else from these two games you think has maybe earned a spot?
I mean, that right back there has been kind of a position that has been maybe one that's, there's been more competition for in the, mm-hmm, squad. And I think that's one, like, Richie Larea has kind of jumped into the side and just stolen it from under the nose of anybody else who had a claim to it. Kind of surprisingly, but he did a great job. And I know John Herdman really likes him.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's definitely a guy. Obviously a lot of the other regulars, and somebody like a Mark Anthony Kay, like, continues to do really well. I think
he's going to give Herdman a headache in the midfield, man.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be really interesting to see what that team is, because these are the two games you need to win, especially, yeah, with the way that Herdman's laid it out. Is like, they got to win this to get a chance to get into the hex, especially, yeah, now that you see like El Salvador slipped up, Panama slipped, mm-hmm, up. Like, that is a legitimate chance.
Oh, it is really close.
Yeah.
It is really close. Like, if you look at the ranking point, I think that they're kind of looking at the home game against the U.S. as almost a must win, which is crazy. It's crazy for Canada to expect to win a game against the United States.
But yeah.
That's where we are.
BMO Field in October. Ryan Telfer for Trinidad scores,
yeah,
in his second ever international match. Started in both games against Martinique.
That guy just loves being first at things, isn't he?
Ryan Telfer, first at things.
First CPL goal. I think he scored the first home goal for York 9.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. That's right.
Yeah. First CPL player to... Well, we should mention that I believe it was before the season, Emery Welshman did score a goal for Guyana.
Yes.
But true, that was before the CPL season had started, so I don't think we're really going to count it.
I mean, it's good for him because he was on Herdman's list.
Yeah.
For this, yeah, camp, and obviously Trinidad came up and he seemed, yeah, ecstatic for it. But it's good to see a player from the Canadian Premier League who has ties to this country get an opportunity like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's really impressive how he took the call from Trinidad and immediately go straight into the starting 11.
Yeah, that blew my mind. Like, yeah, in no knock against Ryan Telfer, he's been unbelievable this season. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, yeah, how'd that happen? Immediately, yeah, in, like, start, like, national anthem going, and then to score in the second game.
I mean, in total fairness to him, if he had gotten that Canadian call up before, he wouldn't have been thrown into the starting 11 immediately.
Yeah,
like he was in Trinidad, and he made good use of it. His goal was, I mean, it wasn't anything flashy, but he got to the right spot, which is something that he's actually been really good at for York 9 this year as well.
And switching to Telfer's parent club, Toronto FC, they're in the Canadian Championship final this week. Yeah. Leg one in Montreal, leg two in Toronto. You're going to be there for that leg two, Charlie.
I believe so, yeah.
What's your predictions? Who's going to score? What's give me everything.
Well, if you just look at form right now, TFC is the informed club. I mean, they are on a bit of an unbeaten streak now. They kind of convincingly did away with Colorado over the weekend. Mm-hmm. And Montreal has just really taken a dip recently. Like, they're just on the outside of the playoffs. I believe they lost to FC Cincinnati.
Yeah,
which is brutal.
Yeah, yeah. It really is. Even Vancouver beat FC Cincinnati when they were Vancouver. when they were in their big dry spell.
Yeah, but I mean, these are two clubs who, whenever they meet, like, form kind of just vanishes, and it's just pure emotion between these two sides. Like, they're never a bad game between them, right? But I mean, TFC was pretty comprehensive in beating Montreal earlier in the summer. So, I don't know. It should be a very exciting final, I think.
Mm-hmm. How do you think these two teams are going to put weight on this final, especially considering Toronto is still kind of in the, they're still on the bubble, still in the playoff mm-hmm. bubble, right?
Yeah, well, I still think that they're going to throw a lot into this final, because these are two teams, especially perhaps more than maybe any other teams in MLS, that know the value of being in the CONCACAF Champions League, because they're two teams that have gone really far in that competition and seen how magical it can be. So I know that I think that that's probably a priority for especially Toronto, who really want to make up for losing to Independiente earlier this year in the CONCACAF Champions League.
So we have fun at KMPL.ca.
Do we? Yeah, I think we do.
We work at a website, by the way. There's no brick. We work at a website. Just keep that in mind. So today we're talking about, because the UEFA Champions League is starting up very shortly.
Yep.
We're talking about Champions League teams that you could equate to, and vice versa, CPL teams.
Yeah.
And how they compare.
So which Champions League team would X CPL team?
Yeah. Basically. Steven Sandor wrote a good one about the EPL earlier in the season, kind of doing a similar thing.
We're following up.
Yeah, we're following up. Okay, so I think let's just go team by team here. We both have our picks, and I'm wondering if we're going to match up on any of them.
I don't know.
Okay, York 9. Who do you have for York 9?
For York 9, this might upset some people, but I have Atletico Madrid for York 9.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
So both seem to not be able to take down their derby rival at the moment.
But like Atletico like went to the Champions League final. It just seems like they always have issues against Real Madrid. But
Yeah. And I mean, Real Madrid also has been to the Champions League final more.
Also recently, of course.
And I mean, there's other similarities. I mean, both teams are coached by a local legend.
Yeah, that's
Jimmy
true.
Jimmy Brendan
yeah.
and Diego Simeone. Both sides are still are in a bit of a transitional process, trying to figure out what to do with the number nine position. After Antoine Griezmann left Atletico, and York 9 is trying to see, is it going to be Simon Adjei?
And
going
of course, to... oh, sorry, I thought you were going to go with York 9 doesn't have a number nine.
Well...
Which, technically, yes, they do not have a number
Technically, they
nine.
Do not have a player who is number nine.
Yeah, dedicated to the fans. Okay, I've got Inter.
For York 9?
For York 9.
Okay.
I find that York is pretty good defensively, although I do say that after a 4-2 loss.
Yeah.
Typically, they're pretty good.
I would say so, generally.
They have a Chilean winger.
Ooh.
Rodrigo Gattis and Alexis Sanchez, who just moved there. And actually, I think their number 10 is Argentinian as well, which you could kind of compare to Aparicio.
Yeah, many
okay, it's like
yeah.
Martinez, I think his name is.
Okay.
I think so. Okay. not nearly as convincing as Charlie's. Okay. Forge. I'm going to go first on this one. I got Barcelona for Forge.
Wow.
They play similar styles. Barca Borges. That's all I'm going to say about that one. Mm-hmm. They got a big stadium. I don't know. I feel like if you're going to say one team in this league adapts that more of that Barcelona style, it's probably going to be Forge. You can see that even on the weekend against HFX, where even sometimes when you play out of the back and you play that system, you can get caught out. But as Barcelona proves over time, just as Forge will likely do in the fall season, statistically, it's going to pan out.
See, you're take is much more logical than mine, and that makes a lot of sense to me. I think that my pick for Barcelona is much funnier. We'll get there in a
bit. Oh, okay. All right.
But I think for Forge, I've got Manchester City.
And oh, yeah, okay.
I mean, partly because, obviously, they're both doing really well in their leagues. They've both got a very important Belgian in their lineup, in Daniel Kurtzen and Kevin De Bruyne.
Different positions, different. I'll leave you on that one.
Kurtzen has played in midfield on several occasions. He's not quite as attacking as De Bruyne, but still, they're important.
Okay, yeah. 4-2 loss in Norwich, or 3-2 loss in Norwich.
They've both got kind of this. They've both got kind of this scoring by committee sort of thing, where they've got a lot of talented attacking players who can score a few, and they've got their main usual suspects, but really they've, like, any number of guys in their lineup on any given day can pot you a goal or two.
Cavalry.
I'm going to go with Juventus. It's hard to see a team with guys with names like Marco Carducci and Nico Pasquadi and not pick an Italian team.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
They're both pretty tactically flexible teams. Mm-hmm. Maurizio Sarri is coming to Juventus and he's kind of instilling this sort of fluid kind of system, which I think Cavalry does very well. They've definitely got a whole bunch of different tricks in their drawer.
Who's Ronaldo then? this is the worst part of the game. You could just, like, keep going and going and going. It might be Pasquadi.
Yeah, I think it would be Pasquadi.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Kind of similar positions, and Pasquadi likes to get wide a little bit more, maybe, but I guess you'd have to.
I've got Bayern.
You got Bayern? I don't mind that either.
So they wear red. I don't know. I always find the Bayern have really good wingers. Kind of saw that with, like, Frank Ribery, who just moved on a free this year.
Right.
I mean, they always have, like, a good depth of wingers. I find that Cavalry has some of the best wingers in the league.
Alphonso Davies.
Of course. I should have mentioned that also. Oh, yeah, Edmonton. Oh, I forgot about that. See? Oh, and then there's always flaws.
There's always issues.
Other side of the El Clasico, Darby, man. What am I thinking? Also, like, I don't know. Don Malanga reminds me of Lewandowski sometimes.
I don't know that.
Yeah.
I see that.
Okay. Valor. I'm going to go... I don't know. I think this one might be controversial. I'm going to go with Shakhtar Donetsk.
I love that. But why?
Okay. Heart of the continent, for one. You got Ukraine and you have Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Also, huge Ukrainian population in Manitoba, I should also add.
That's true.
I don't know. Like, a ton of really good, tricky, technical players. They can always surprise in this competition. They're always there. Like, they can always make a quarterfinal, like, every 4 years or something. Like, Valor can do that. And they've also got, like, a bunch of young talent that they supplement with players, like, from outside the continent, whether it be Brazil. And then we see in Valor with, like, Galan and Paolucci being, like, excellent midseason additions. So, Shakhtar Donetsk.
So, you think your pick is controversial. Mine is Barcelona.
Oh, for Valor. Yes.
And we talked about this a little bit earlier.
Valeronia.
Right off the start. I mean, if there is a player in the Canadian Premier League who you are going to say plays the most similarly to Lionel Messi, we're obviously not saying that this person is Leo Messi. It's Marco Bustos, right?
Yeah. I think you need another qualifier for that one. I'm just kidding.
But it is.
Yeah, it's true.
I just keep thinking of his goal against HFX Wanderers a few weeks ago where he kind of danced through the whole defense, and I'm like,
yeah, and he had the goal before that where he, like, chipped and had, like, really nice footwork before. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, they both play in big cavernous cathedral stadiums.
We've got, like, I don't know, like, Patrasso reminds me of, like, one of those sort of, like, Barcelona attackers too, right?
I mean, Barcelona is another team that has too many attacking players that they just can't fit into the lineup, right?
Yeah.
As we spoke about earlier in this very podcast.
That's unbelievable. Yeah, and Barcelona.
And Matthias Janssens looks a little bit like Marc-Andre ter Stegen.
Yes, he does.
A little bit.
And same with Tyson Farago, who just came back from injury. That's hilarious. Okay. That's my favorite one so far, I think. Okay. FC Edmonton, I'm going to go with Atletico Madrid on this one.
Okay.
They always look good in a 4-4-2, playing direct. Always good to nick a result against good teams, like we saw against Forge earlier in this year. I'm going to go with them, I think, on that one.
I think that's pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
Pretty reasonable. I've gone with Chelsea for FC Edmonton, which was also the team that Steven Sandor picked for them in his EPL comparisons.
Interesting.
And for a different reason, because a lot of this has happened since he wrote that piece, both of these sides have recently been just given this huge boost offensively by the breakout of a 21-year-old striker. Easton Ongaro has come into the Eddies lineup, and he's, well, as we mentioned, he's kind of dropped off the pace a little bit in the last couple of games, but still he
had unbelievable form to start.
Unreal over the summer. And former Aston Villa player,
there it is,
Tammy Abraham, has just solved Chelsea's problem of losing Eden Hazard.
Charlie's a Villa fan, by the way. If you didn't like listen to a specific spring episode, you wouldn't know that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Tammy Abraham had a great couple seasons with Villa, or one?
Yeah. I think it was just the one.
It was last year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he got us into the Premier League, so.
Okay, well, if we can go on that, I would talk about Derby County players at Chelsea right now absolutely destroying, but I'll just breeze past that one.
And another thing that I thought of was Chelsea obviously is not a team that's leaned on its academy much in over the years, but with the transfer ban this year, they suddenly have to.
That's true.
And FC Edmonton, which kind of brings them closer to the FC Edmonton model of having this really established Edmonton academy, right?
Wow, yeah, that's really good. Okay, HFX Wanderers, I have Benfica for this one.
I don't mind that.
A couple reasons.
Not at all.
So Scott Firth did a trial at Benfica.
Did he?
Yeah. So that's number one. Number two, just looking at the map, I didn't do the exact measurements, but I'm pretty sure that's the closest you can get between a CPL team and a Champions League team. Just straight across. It looks like maybe, I don't know, like a 4-hour boat ride. I don't know. Something like that. And yeah, I don't know. I feel like they're both kind of like, they're both underdogs, but again, they can produce players, and they can also, you know, win on any week. And you can definitely see Benfica in the knockout stage in this tournament.
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't mind that. I went with Napoli for the Wanderers.
That's so good. I love Napoli.
They're both in port cities, historically significant port cities, of course. They wear blue. They both
blue play, on blue.
Blue on blue. They both play in these notoriously hard stadiums to play in. Like, they're teams that are much stronger at home than they are on the road at many, many occasions. So I think that the comparison there is kind of fair. Napoli is also sort of developing this kind of dual striker thing that's kind of similar to something that I think that HFX could do with Luis Alberto Perea and Thomas Skublak kind of playing off each other.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of an interesting shout.
Yeah, it's really good. When is HFX going to get like really weird digital camo alternate kits? I don't know about that. Okay, for Pacific, I have Lille.
Lille.
A lot of young players, developing a lot of good players. And I'm kind of picking them too because Lille, they surprised me that they were back in this. I didn't follow the French league very well because I know the season prior, they almost got relegated. They had a terrible season two seasons ago, and now they're back up. So I see that as being Pacific maybe struggling a little bit in the spring season, but now, as we've seen, they've really come to their own in the fall and are like surging ahead at quite a pace. So
I like that we're kind of looking at these European clubs like multi-year trajectory and kind of mapping it onto like 5 months of a CPL season.
Yeah, like 20 games. Look, I'm trying my best. I'm trying my best.
So I also immediately thought of the young players for Pacific, and I went with kind of the gold standard in having great young players in Champions League, and that's Ajax.
True.
Ajax, yep. I think, has always been the team that you think of when you think of they've got this unbelievable academy set up, and they always are kind of giving minutes to young players, young local players. There's also a couple Dutch connections at Pacific. I mean, Michael Silverbauer played for Utrecht for a little bit.
Oh, true, right.
Marcel de Jong, I think, spent some time in PSV's academy.
Yes, he did.
Obviously, neither club is Ajax, but they're the only Dutch team in the group stage.
Yeah, and I mean, Ajax's impact has been felt in Dutch football for years. So,
yeah.
Interesting. Okay, I don't think we got any one team the same. Eh? That's interesting.
I don't think so.
Valor, Shakhtar Donetsk, or Barcelona. Okay, we'll see you next week.